Back in 1964, the Civil Rights Act desegregated restaurants. But over 50 years later, a restaurant critic, Todd Kleiman, took a random count in Washington, D.C. restaurants and found that in a span of 160 meals, only 8 times did he see more than 10 black people in the dining room. In 90 of his meals, there were only white people. So he set about asking why. He asked chefs, owners, managers, and no one would talk with him on record. Except for Andy Shalal. He's the owner of a half dozen restaurants called Busboys and Poets, whose purpose is to bring together guests of all races. Not just by saying, hey, sure, our door is open, but really working to find out how you make a space where everyone wants to come. Part of that, Andy says, is understanding that to welcome certain people, or to keep other people away, no one actually needs to say anything. Instead, he thinks every restaurant gives off invisible codes that tell us how welcome we really are. So we asked Andy to come help us decode what that means. Andy, great to talk with you.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
You know, I think it's probably a little bit charged to talk about restaurants as being segregated or integrated. But in reality, the fact is, when you look around most restaurant dining rooms, you know, really rarely see a real mix of different races. And you've decided that in your restaurants, a racially mixed crowd is, you know, exactly what you want. But it's not as simple as saying, hey, we're open, everyone's welcome, come on in, right? Because people tend to gravitate towards places that they feel comfortable in, and for whatever reason, not everyone finds the same places comfortable. So what are some of the choices that you've made to appeal to diners of different races?
Well, I mean, there's a big history, of course, in America about segregated restaurants. You know, I remember growing up here and seeing the footage on television of the Woolworth counters and the amount of violence that went into that. And I always wondered, like, what is it that makes people so angry about someone that's different from them dining next to them? That was always fascinating to me to see it in America. I come, of course, from Iraq. I'm a brown person. I don't identify as black or white. So for me, it was always this sort of strange puzzle that America is unable to come to grips with. And when I see restaurants, I see them as almost like a common ground that people can come to and be able to work through the racial differences by sitting together and breaking bread together.
So how do you make that happen?
So you have to look at what are the things that keep people away. And there are so many untold symbols out there, so many things that you experience as a diner when you go out to eat. And all of us know when we go out to eat, we have a good experience, a bad experience. Sometimes we can't really pinpoint why one experience was good and one wasn't. So if you are to dissect those pieces, you start looking at the staff, you start looking at the way you were greeted, you start looking at where you were seated, you start looking at the type of food you were served, who served you, how was it served. All these are little touch points that I think restaurants have that oftentimes have been ignored or left just to happen. And we really have a very strong intention about how those things happen. So for instance, if you have, let's say, a hostess at the door and you have an empty restaurant and it's a Saturday morning, and we get busy for brunch, but let's say you just open the door and there's no one in the entire restaurant. A black couple comes in. If you take them all the way to the back, see them in the corner, which happens to be the nicest table in the restaurant, the black couple might think, why are you putting me back here? On the other hand, if you have a white couple, let's say, comes in and you see them way in the back in the corner, they're thinking they have a nice little private space all to themselves. The experiences are so different depending on what background we come from. So we train our staff to be much more aware of it. When you're seating people, have a conversation with them and say, where would you like to sit? Or There's other instances. For instance, let's say you have a black hostess and you have a black couple walk in, and right behind them is a white couple. And the black hostess immediately goes to the black couple and she says, hey, how are y'all doing? Come on in. And she takes them and seats them. And then she goes back to the white couple and she says, two, right this way. Suddenly, the white couple feels like they're left out. So we train with the idea that we are in a racial society, that race matters in America today, and that because of that, we don't pretend like it's invisible. We don't pretend like it's not there. We actually deal with it head on.
You mentioned in the article where you were quoted, in Todd Kleiman's article, that there were other issues too, like things that might be a little more even more invisible, things like how your menu is written. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think when we moved into an area that was gentrifying, we wanted to make sure that people that have lived there are still going to stay and not feel like they're being pushed out, not only by, of course, the high cost of rents and cost of just living, but also by the type of places that are coming in and what kind of signals they send. And we wanted to make sure that we're not coming in with arugula this and, foam this and, sauce that. You know, I don't want to call something beurre blanc when it could be just a lemon butter sauce. You know, those types of things, I think, make a difference in how you connect with folks that may not be familiar with the more modern cuisine or the more, fancier names that we've given to dishes that may be really simple. We just make them fancy and charge a lot more for them. So we want to make sure that's usually how it works. We want to make sure that our menu is accessible to as many people as possible. So we are looking at not only racial diversity, we're looking for economic diversity. We're looking for people that are students. We're looking for people that are elderly that have lived here for a long time and are on limited income. So we try to really accommodate as many people as possible and create a menu that is very accessible. And you don't have to be embarrassed to pronounce something if you don't know how to say it exactly. You know what I mean? I think a lot of times when you have those types of menus, they tend to be intimidating and people don't go there.
Yeah. How successful do you think you are?
Well, I think we're pretty successful. I mean, we have been now in business for over 12 years, and we have managed, despite all the changes that are happening all around us, the city is gentrifying by breakneck speed. Despite all that, we still maintain one of the most diverse gathering places in the entire city. And we are fortunate in the fact that people still find us to be that safe space. And what really gives me hope and a sense of wanting to continue this is how many people tell us how much they really love this kind of atmosphere and why isn't it more prevalent. And that's really encouraging because deep down inside, I think people want to mix. They don't want to segregate. But because it's just more comfortable to segregate, they do. When they see how it could be, they are very thrilled and excited about it, and they're a lot more hopeful and really positive about it.
That's fascinating. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Andy.
Thank you.
Andy Shalal is the owner of Busboys and Poets. And if you'd like to read that article that inspired this conversation, it's called Coding and Decoding Dinner by Todd Kleiman at oxfordamerican.org. It's a really great read.